This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interests of its audiences in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Hello, and welcome to the African American Experience, a program celebrating the artistic, cultural, and historic contributions of African Americans. This program has been created and produced by Audio Journal's Roy Allen Project to carry on the work and vision of its namesake. Roy Allen was an extraordinary human being who deeply touched the lives of his family, his friends, and his colleagues. He was a trailblazer for African Americans in the fields of theater, radio, and television. In carrying on Roy's vision to inspire the African American community to a sense of pride and power in its achievements and to share those achievements with all the community, we present the African American Experience with your host, Tina E. Gaffney. Hello, everyone. I thought in this episode we would talk about a subject not many people talk about these days, unless you happen to be in the field, architecture. This is a feature of Mr. Paul R. Williams. Paul Revere Williams, F-A-I-A, was born February the 18th, 1894, and passed on January the 23rd, 1980. He was an African-American architect based in Los Angeles, California. Most of the buildings he designed were in Southern California and included the homes of numerous celebrities such as Frank Sinatra, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, Lon Chaney, Barbara Stanwyck, and Charles Corral. He also designed many commercial, institutional, and civic buildings. He was born February the 18th, 1894, Mr. Paul Revere Williams was, in Los Angeles, California. He passed on January the 23rd, 1980, at the age of 85 years young, in Los Angeles, California. His alma mater was the University of Southern California. His occupation was as an architect. Now, these are just some of the buildings he's created. In 1926, the 28th Street YMCA, Los Angeles. In 1935, the René Ferron Residence. In 1938, the First Church of Christ Scientist, Reno, Nevada. In 1939, Saks Fifth Avenue, Beverly Hills. In 1940, the Pueblo del Rio Housing Development, which was a joint venture. In 1948, the Golden State Mutual Life, Los Angeles. In 1949 and 1963, Perino's Restaurant, alterations of existing buildings. In 1951, the Williams Residence. In 1953, the Imperial Courts Housing Development, Los Angeles. In 1958, Los Angeles Superior Court. In 1961, the LAX Steam Building, joint venture. In 1961, La Concha Motel. In 1962, the St. Jude Hospital in Memphis. in 1968, the first AME Church, Los Angeles, and in 1964, the Beverly Sunset Medical Center, Los Angeles. He also was the architect for Woodrow Wilson Senior High School. Williams came from a family of middle-class Memphis residents, Chester Stanley and Lila Wright Williams. They migrated to Los Angeles in 1893 with their son, Chester, to start a fruit business, but were not successful. Paul was born in Los Angeles on February the 18th, 1894. His father passed in 1896 from tuberculosis, and his mother 2 years later from the same illness. In 1898, leaving the boys in foster care, he was eventually adopted by C.J. Clarkson and his wife. Williams was the only African-American student in his elementary school. He studied at the Los Angeles School of Art and Design and at the Los Angeles branch of the New York Beaux Arts Institute of Design, Atelier, subsequently working as a landscape architect with Wilbur Cook, Jr. He studied architectural engineering from 1916 to 1919 at the University of Southern California, where he earned his degree, designing several residential buildings while a student there. Williams became a certified architect in California in 1921 and the first certified African-American architect west of the Mississippi. Williams married Della Mae Givens on June 27, 1917, at the first AME church in Los Angeles. They had three children, Paul Revere Williams Jr., born and passed on June 30, 1925, buried in the Evergreen Cemetery, Los Angeles, Marilyn Frances Williams, born on Christmas Day, December the 25th, 1926, and Norma Lucille Williams Harvey, born September the 18th, 1928. Williams won an architectural competition at age 25, and 3 years later opened his own office. Known as an outstanding draftsman, he perfected the skill of sketching upside down. This skill was developed because in the 1920s, many of his white clients felt uncomfortable sitting directly next to an African-American man. He learned to sketch upside down so that he could sit across the desk from his clients, who would see his sketches right side up. Struggling to gain attention, he served on the first Los Angeles City Planning Commission in 1920. From 1921 through 1924, Williams worked for Los Angeles architect John C. Austin, eventually becoming chief draftsman before establishing his own office. In 1923, Williams became the first African-American member of the American Institute of Architects, or the AIA. In 1939, he won the AIA Award of Merit for his design of the MCA building in Beverly Hills, now headquarters of the Paradigm Talent Agency. At one point in his career, Williams became interested in prefabricated structures. He worked together with Wallace Neff to design experimental airform structures, which were small homes that only took a few days to construct using simple materials. A. Quincy Jones, who lived from 1913 to 1979, was an architect who is claimed to have hired Williams and later collaborated with him on projects in Palm Springs, including the Palm Springs Tennis Club, 1947, and the Town and Country, 1948, and Romanoff's on the Rocks, 1948 restaurants. Lockheed and Gordon Industries recruited Williams to design a concept for a car alternative travel system in Las Vegas. He developed the idea of a monorail-like system called the Skylift Magicab that would bring people to and from McCarran Airport and the city center. During World War II, Williams worked for the Navy Department as an architect. During his career, Williams designed over 2,000 buildings. In 1948, the anthology radio drama Destination Freedom by Richard Durham recapped his earlier life. In 1951, Williams won the Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Man of the Year Award, and in 1953, he received the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP for his outstanding contributions as an architect and member of the African American community. Williams also received honorary doctorates from Lincoln University of Missouri, Doctor of Science, 1941, Howard University, Doctor of Architecture, 1952, and the Tuskegee Institute, Doctor of Fine Arts, 1956. In 1956, he won an award for service from Wisdom Magazine for, quote, contributions to knowledge and distinguished service to mankind, end quote. In 1957, he became the first African-American member to be inducted into the AIA's College of Fellows. An April 2, 1957 letter from the Executive Secretary of the AIA offered Williams the honor of fellowship and membership in the College of Fellows for your notable contribution in public service. USC listed him among its distinguished alumni in the television commercial for the school shown during its football games in 2004. The American Institute of Architects, or AIA, gave him its gold medal in 2017, 37 years after Williams' passing. Our profession desperately needs more architects like Paul Williams. His pioneering career has encouraged others to cross a chasm of historic biases. I can't think of another architect whose work embodies the spirit of the gold medal better. His recognition demonstrates a significant shift in the equity for the profession and the Institute. William J. Bates, FAIA, in his support of Williams' nomination for the AIA Gold Medal Architectural Design. Some of the books that talk about Mr. Williams' works are The Small Home of Tomorrow, 1945, the essay I Am a Negro, American Magazine, 1936, that was reprinted in Ebony Magazine in 1986. The following is a quote from that essay. I came to realize that I was being condemned, not by a lack of ability, but by my color. I passed through successive stages of bewilderment, inarticulate protest, resentment, and finally, reconciliation to the status of my race. Eventually, however, as I grew older and thought more clearly, I found in my condition an incentive to personal accomplishment, an inspiring challenge. Without having the wish to show them, I developed a fierce desire to show myself. I wanted to vindicate every ability I had. I wanted to acquire new abilities. I wanted to prove that I, as an individual, deserved a place in the world. Williams designed more than 2,000 private homes, most of which were in the Hollywood Hills, and the mid-Wilshire portion of Los Angeles, including his own home in Lafayette Square, part of historic West Adams, Los Angeles. He also designed at least one home in the San Rafael District, along with many others in Pasadena and La Canada Flint Ridge. The Linda Vista area of Pasadena has many Spanish colonial and French country homes of his design, including many commissioned by business magnates, the Chrysler Corporation, and actors. His most famous homes were for celebrities, and he was well regarded for his mastery of various architectural styles. Modern interpretations of Tudor Revival, French Chateau, Regency, French Country, and Mediterranean architecture were all within his vernacular. One notable home, the J. Paley House in 1935, which he designed for J. Paley in Holmby Hills, and there may be some people who are unaware about the J. Paley House. He was a businessman, and he and his wife Lily lived in the house that Mr. Williams designed. It had 13 bedrooms. It was 15,110 square feet, and it was built in 1935 on a 6-acre estate. And later, Williams designed the residence of Baron Hilton, which was used as the Colby Mansion in exterior scenes for the Colby's television series. Williams' client list included Frank Sinatra, the notorious Push-Button House, Bill Bojangles Robinson, Lon Chaney Sr., Lucille Ball, Julie London, Tyrone Power. He did two houses for him. Barbara Stanwyck, Burt Lahr, who was one of the original cast members of The Wizard of Oz, the 1939 one, Charles Correll, Will Hayes, Zazu Pitts, and Danny Thomas. In contrast to these mansions, Williams co-designed with Hilliard Robinson the first federally funded public housing projects of the post-war period, Langston Terrace in Washington, D.C., and later the Pueblo del Rio project in southeast Los Angeles. Williams famously remarked upon the bitter irony of the fact that most of the homes he designed and whose construction he oversaw were on parcels whose deeds included segregation covenants barring African-American people from purchasing them. A number of his works are listed on the National Register of Historic Places. In Los Angeles, he designed a home for Victor Rossetti, a Spanish Revival style, built in 1928. He designed and was the architect for the 28th Street YMCA, the 421 Lafayette Park Place, the Angeles Mesa Elementary School, the Angeles Funeral Home, the first African Methodist Episcopal Church of Los Angeles, the Founders Church of Religious Science in 1960, the Golden State Mutual Life Insurance Building in 1949, the Hollywood YMCA, the J. Paley House in 1935, the Kelly Music Company Building in 1929, Kenneth Hahn Hall of Administration, Stanton Stockwell Williams and Wilson, the Los Angeles International Airport, 501 World Way parking structure, the theme building from the 1960s, Marina Del Rey Middle School, Stanley Mosque Courthouse, Stanton, Stockwell, Williams, and Wilson, the Nickerson Gardens, Perino's, the 1950 redesign and 1954 renovation, Pueblo del Rio housing project in 1941, the Second Baptist Church, the University of California, Los Angeles, McCretz Botany Building, Pritzker Hall Psychology Tower, Woodrow Wilson High School, one or more works in the 27th Street Historic District, elsewhere in California, 9600 Wilshire Boulevard, Beverly Hills, with Parkinson and Parkinson. Al Jolson's tomb at Hillside Memorial Park in Culver City. Arrowhead Springs Hotel and Spa, San Bernardino. Beverly Hills Hotel, the 1940s redesign and addition. Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Mall, original anchor stores. Cord Estates, late 1930 in Beverly Hills. The Gatehouse, 1940, Lake Arrowhead. The Goldschmidt House, San Clemente. The Palm Springs Tennis Club. The Roberts House Ranch, the Tropical Terrace in Malibu. The Seaview Palos Verdes in 1960. In Nevada, the Carver Park Homes, El Reno Apartments, the First Church of Christ, Scientist Reno, the Luella Garvey House, the Guardian Angel Cathedral in Las Vegas, the Herman House in 1936 in Reno, the La Concha Motel, one or more works in Berkeley Square, Las Vegas, elsewhere, the Hilltop Farmhouse in 1934, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, the Hotel Nutibara in 1945 in Medellin, Colombia. Now, in 1955, Williams was hired to transform a WWW Woolworths store at the corner of Broadway and 45th in Los Angeles, California, into the Broadway Federal Savings and Loan. When the bank opened, Williams safeguarded much of his business papers in the bank. During the fires that consumed the area after the Rodney King trial in 1992, the Broadway bank burned, and it was feared that much of Williams' archives had been lost. Williams' family had carefully curated the documents, and Williams' granddaughter, Karen Elise Hudson, agreed to the acquisition of the archive by the Getty Research Institute and the U.S. School of Architecture. In June of 1920, Milton S. F. Curry of USC announced the contents of the archive, about 35,000 architectural plans, 10,000 original drawings, blueprints, photographs, and correspondence that help fill the gaps of Los Angeles modernism in the 20th century. Williams retired from his practice in 1973 and passed from diabetes on January the 23rd, 1980, at the age of 85 years young. His funeral was held at the first AME church he designed, and the presiding minister, Cecil Murray, was joined in the pulpit by Dr. William H. D. Hornaday, the senior minister of Founders Church of Religious Science that Williams also had designed. Dr. Hornaday described Williams as a gentle and courtly man of the highest integrity. Williams was interred in the Sanctuary of Radiance Manchester Garden Mausoleum at Inglewood Park Cemetery in Inglewood. Williams' widow, Della Williams, who lived from 1895 to 1996, co-founded with Fanny Williams the Wilfundel Club, established November the 21st, 1945, by African-American women active in the Los Angeles, California community. The Wilfundel Club's goal has been to promote civic betterment, philanthropic endeavors, and general culture. The Wilfundel Club is the oldest African-American women's club in Los Angeles. Club meetings are still held at the beautiful Wilfundel Club House on 3425 West Adams Boulevard in Los Angeles. Della Williams survived her famous husband by 16 years, living to the age of 100. She passed on July the 24th, 1996. Her funeral was held at Founders Church of Religious Science, designed by her husband. She was interred in the Williams Crypt, Inglewood Park Cemetery, Inglewood. On October the 29th, 2015, a monument at Memorial Plaza to Paul Williams was dedicated just to the north of the Golden State Mutual Life Insurance Building as part of its recent renovation. The monument, made by artist Georgia Tolliver, features a 9-foot-tall bas-relief of Paul Williams with many of his significant works. The bas-relief is flanked with interpretive panels with a biography of Mr. Williams, as well as a history of the Golden State Mutual Life Insurance Company. Some of the quotes from Mr. Williams are the following. If I allow the fact that I am a Negro to checkmate my will to do, now I will inevitably form the habit of being defeated. End quote. Quote, planning is thinking beforehand how something is to be made or done, and mixing imagination with the product, which, in a broad sense, makes all of us planners. The only difference is that some people get a license to get paid for thinking, and the rest of us just contribute our good thoughts to our fellow man. End quote. Without having the wish to show them, I developed a fierce desire to show myself. End quote. Williams wrote in his 1937 essay titled, I Am a Negro, for the American magazine. Quote, I wanted to vindicate every ability I had. I wanted to acquire new abilities. I wanted to prove that I, as an individual, deserved a place in the world. Expert homes are my business, and social housing is my hobby. Being a Californian was to my advantage in California. The people are interested in ideas that are new and fresh, without the traditional or historical ties that are ordinarily more associated with East Coast thinking. Williams is featured on the documentary series Profiles of African American Success, in coordination with the Hollywood Studio District Neighborhood Council and Paul Williams Place Committee, an effort is being made to rename the historic North St. Andrews Place in Los Angeles after this icon in architecture. Hollywood Style is a book by Karen Hudson, Williams' granddaughter, about his houses. The 99% Invisible podcast, The Architect of Hollywood, looks into Williams' life and influence. The documentary, Hollywood's Architect, The Paul R. Williams Story, aired on PBS in February 2020. A collection of 280 photographs was published in 2020 by Jana Ireland, featuring Williams' work called Regarding Paul R. Williams, A Photographer's View. Now, I always think that the more you invest in the dream that you have, it's kind of like those things they call now vision boards. The more you invest in the dream that you have, hopefully you will help it reach fruition. In the LAPL.org, the Los Angeles Public Library, there was an article, Quiet Gentleman, Paul Revere Williams and His Los Angeles Dream, by Stephen Kilgore. A quiet gentleman, he found his voice in his designs. When others attempted to silence him with racism, he spoke as others could not. For himself, and for his community. He also found his voice in community participation. Appointed to the first City Planning Commission of Los Angeles in 1920, he understood the importance of civic responsibility and representation. From then on, he would serve on city and county boards in the arts and planning, allowing him to again speak volumes, whether selecting artwork for public buildings or laying the groundwork for public spaces. Paul Revere Williams was orphaned by the age of 4 when his parents passed, 2 years apart. A foster mother raised him and dedicated herself to his education and instilled in young Paul that he could achieve anything he wanted. He was the only African-American student at Santus Avenue Elementary School, which was located where L.A. Liveway is today. When he was attending Polytechnic High School, he discovered his passion for architecture, despite being counseled against choosing architecture as a career because of his race. Paul would go on to study at the Los Angeles School of Art and Design, New York Beaux Arts Institute of Design Atelier, the Los Angeles branch, and complete his architectural degree at the University of Southern California in 1921. Now, Paul R. Williams was the first African-American architect west of the Mississippi who was winning architectural competitions and owning his own practice by the age of 25. His talent and clientele took off in the 1920s, setting the stage for highly sought-after design skills that Williams had. Williams would go on to create some of the most iconic and timeless structures that would ever grace Los Angeles and the Southland with the Williams touch and his California flair. Early in his career, Williams developed the skill of writing upside down while standing across from his clients when he noticed that some of them felt uncomfortable sitting next to a man of color. Williams described this skill as an artistic sleight of hand. It was about making a dazzling first impression so that people would think twice about judging him by the color of his skin. It is ironic that one of the most celebrated architects of Los Angeles, who designed homes for some of the most famous people, would not be able to live in most of the neighborhoods they replaced because of the racist land covenants that held sway, and did not begin to relent until the Supreme Court rulings in 1948 and 1953. These images are just a few of the highlights that are in the collection representing Paul Revere Williams' lasting influence and artistry across the landscape of Los Angeles. A contribution that has affected our residents, rich and poor alike, creating places that cause us to dream and strive in spite of what challenges we may face. Williams designed around 3,000 projects over his career, and he was the first African-American member of the American Institute of Architects, or the AIA, in 1921. And the first African-American to be inducted into the AIA College of Fellows in 1957. Paul R. Williams passed on January the 23rd, 1980, and is buried at the Inglewood Park Cemetery. Paul Williams' caption, dated November 17th, 1951, reads, quote, Paul R. Williams, who, with Milton J. Brock and Leonard J. Chudakov will be honored for his work in the promotion of good human relations by the Buildings and Allied Trades Committee of the National Conference of Christians and Jews at a dinner December the 11th at the Beverly Hills Hotel. This was announced yesterday by Ernest J. Lubecki, Vice President and Treasurer of the Title Insurance and Trust Company, Chairman of the Committee, Herald Examiner Collection. Sunset Plaza Apartments, Karen E. Hudson, granddaughter of Paul Revere Williams, sits on a diving board with her grandfather's magnificent creation rising behind her. Designed for photographer Frank S. Hoover as an investment property, the luxury Sunset Plaza Apartments cost over $350,000 to build and opened in 1936. Paul R. Williams built this multi-level, 18-unit, Georgian Revival luxury apartment with interiors by Bullocks and all the modern conveniences of the time, including an inventive forced air heating and cooling system. The Sunset Plaza Apartments rose like the Acropolis of a reimagined Athens over the Sunset Strip. In 1980, Sunset Plaza Apartments were declared a historic cultural monument, only to be demolished in 1987 to build a private residence called Casa Bella. Postcard of Rochester Mansion, Eddie Anderson's home, Edwin Lincoln Anderson was the first African-American to have a regular role on a nationally syndicated radio show, the Jack Benny Program, on NBC. Eddie wanted a home designed by Paul R. Williams, but because of restrictive and racist land covenants, he was limited on where he could build his home. Eddie chose a lot in Exposition Park, where he had his Rochester mansion built in 1937. Pueblo del Rio, Chief Architect 1940, Pueblo del Rio Housing Project is located at 1801 East 53rd Street, Los Angeles, California, 90058, and was designed by architects Richard Neutra and Paul Revere Williams. The design was inspired by the Garden City concept, which called for the use of green belts and parks to be interspersed with clusters of housing and public buildings. Originally intended for factory workers and veterans, the property was an exercise in form and functionality. Spread over 17.5 acres with 57 two-story apartment buildings, Pueblo del Rio is one of the oldest and largest housing projects in Los Angeles. By the 1950s, with the addition of more apartments on an additional 16.6 acres, Pueblo del Rio had become strictly a low-income housing project. Beverly Hills Hotel renovations and additions from 1941 to 1949, the sign for the Beverly Hills Hotel was part of the aesthetic that Williams designed and has become the most iconic trademark of the hotel. So if you're ever in Beverly Hills and are driving by and you see that big sign that says Beverly Hills Hotel, you're looking at something designed by Paul R. Williams. Beverly Hills Hotel renovations and additions from 1941 through 1949, the banana leaf motif is one of the many design elements that Williams created in collaboration with John Lucarini and Harrier Schellenberger while redesigning the hotel interiors. So, Ms. Harriet Schellenberger, John Lucarini, and Paul R. Williams all worked on that banana leaf motif together. The Los Angeles County Courthouse contract for In Collaboration, 1951, designed by a collaboration of architects, including Paul R. Williams, called the Associate Architects, construction began in 1954, and the building opened in 1959. Perino's End of an Era, 1983. View of Perino's in 1983 at the end of its celebrated and storied career. Perino's closed 3 years later and was torn down in 2005. Perino's designed in 1954, the 1937 view of the Thrift Mart, where Perino's would move to in the 1950s, and which Paul R. Williams would design and remodel twice. Paul R. Williams, 1965. The Roland J. Curtis Collection has Paul Williams receiving a resolution from City Councilman Tom Bradley, Billy Mills, and Gilbert Lindsay in 1955. That is so great. It makes me think how those times were back then, because, man, so much to do, so much to accomplish. Perseverance was a real trait in those days, just like it is now. And someone else that I think of when I think of perseverance, oh my goodness gracious, was the one, the only, Eartha Kitt. Eartha Mae Kitt, née Keith, was born January the 17th, 1927, and passed on Christmas Day, December the 25th, 2008. She was an African-American singer, songwriter, and actress. She was known for her highly distinctive singing style and her 1953 recording of C'est Bon and the Christmas novelty song Santa Baby. She was born in North or South Carolina, that hadn't been determined. She passed in Weston, Connecticut. Other names she went by were Mother Eartha or Kitty. She was a singer, actress, comedian, dancer, songwriter, and activist. Her career spanned from 1942 to 2008. She was married to John W. McDonald in 1960. They parted company in 1964. She had one child. The musical genres she sang in were vocal jazz, cabaret, dance, country music, and disco. She worked for a number of labels, RCA Victor, CAP, NGM, EMI, GNP, Crescendo, Decca, Spark, Can't Stop, Ariola, ITM, DRG, Strike Force, and His Master's Voice. Kitt began her career in 1942 and appeared in the 1945 original Broadway theater production of the musical Carib Song. In the early 1950s, Kitt had 6 U.S. Top 30 entries, including Uska Dada, 1953, and I Want to Be Evil, also in 1953. Her other recordings included the U.K. Top 10 song Under the Bridges of Paris in 1954, Just an Old-Fashioned Girl in 1956, and Where's My Man in 1983. Orson Welles once called her the most exciting woman in the world. Kitt starred as Catwoman in the third and final season of the television series Batman in 1967. In 1968, Kitt's career in the U.S. deteriorated after she made anti-Vietnam war statements at a White House luncheon with Lady Bird Johnson, the wife of President Lyndon B. Johnson. 10 years later, Kitt made a successful return to Broadway in the 1978 original production of the musical Timbuktu, for which she received the first of her 2 Tony Award nominations. Kitt's second was for the 2000 original production of the musical The Wild Party. She wrote 3 autobiographies. Kitt found a new generation of fans through her various voice acting roles in the last decade of her life. She was the voice of 2 villainous characters in animated works during the 21st century, Zima in the Emperor's New Groove franchise and Vexus in My Life as a Teenage Robot, with the former role earning her 2 Daytime Emmy Awards. Kit posthumously won a third Emmy in 2010 for her guest performance on Wonder Pets. Eartha Mae Keith was born in the small town of North, South Carolina on January the 17th, 1927. Her mother, Anna Mae Keith, later Anna Mae Riley, was of Cherokee and African descent. Though she had little knowledge of her father, it was reported that he was the son of the owner of the plantation where she had been born, and that Kit was conceived by not positive means. In a 2013 biography, British journalist John Williams claimed that Kit's father was a white man, a local doctor named Daniel Sturkey. Kit's daughter, Kit McDonald Shapiro, has questioned the accuracy of the claim. Eartha's mother soon went to live with an African-American man who refused to accept Eartha because of her relatively pale complexion. Kit was raised by a relative named Aunt Rosa, in whose household she was abused. Interviewed on BBC Wales Late Call in 1971, Kit said, quote, "I remember at times when we didn't have anything to eat for what seemed like an insurmountable amount of time. We had to rely on the forest and whatever we could dig out of the ground, such as weeds or grass. I remember that it had a kind of onion growing at the bottom of it. And when we could find things like that to eat, then we were all right. I'm very glad that her childhood self will always be a part of me because she helps me do what she knows I have to do out there on that stage." After the passing of Annie Mae, Eartha was sent to live with another close relative named Mamie Kit, who Eartha later came to believe was her biological mother, in Harlem, New York City, where Eartha attended the Metropolitan Vocational High School, later renamed the High School of Performing Arts. Kit began her career as a member of the Katherine Dunham Company in 1943 as a dancer and remained a member of the troupe until 1948. A talented singer with a distinctive voice, Kit recorded the hits Let's Do It, Champagne Taste, C'est Bon, which Dan Freeberg famously burlesqued, Just an Old-Fashioned Girl, Monotonous, J. Cherche Rome, Love for Sale, I'd Rather Be Burned as a Witch, Got the Beam, a Turkish Melody, Mink Schmink, Under the Bridges of Paris, and her most recognizable hit, Santa Baby, which was released in 1953. Kit's unique style was enhanced as she became fluent in French during her years performing in Europe. Kit spoke four languages and sang in 11, which she demonstrated in many of the live recordings of her cabaret performances. In 1950, Orson Welles gave Kit her first starring role as Helen of Troy in his staging of Dr. Faustus. 2 years later, Kit was cast in The Revenue, New Faces of 1952, introducing Monotonous and Bal Petit Bal, two songs with which she is still identified. In 1954, 20th Century Fox distributed an independently filmed version of the review entitled New Faces, in which Kit performed Monotonous, Uskadara Sebon, and Santa Baby, though it is often alleged that Wells and Kit had an affair. During her 1957 run in Shinbone Alley, Kit categorically denied this in a June 2001 interview with George Wains of Vanity Fair. "I never had intimate relations with Orson Welles," Kit told Vanity Fair. "It was a working situation and nothing else." Her other films in the 1950s included The Mark of the Hawk, 1957, St. Louis Blues, 1958, and Anna Lucasta, 1958. Throughout the rest of the 1950s and early 1960s, Kit recorded, worked in film, television, and nightclubs, and returned to the Broadway stage in Mrs. Patterson during the 1954-1955 season, Shinbone Alley in 1957, and the short-lived Charlie's progress in 1959. In 1964, Kate helped open the Circle Star Theater in San Carlos, California. In the late 1960s, Batman featured Kit as Catwoman after Julie Newmar had left the show in 1967. She appeared in a 1967 Mission Impossible episode, The Traitor, as Tina Mara, a contortionist. In 1956, Kit published an autobiography called Thursday's Child, which would later serve as inspiration for the name of the 1999 David Bowie song, Thursday's Child. The Royal Variety performance in the London Palladium on October the 29th, 1962, featured Kit singing solo, but also appeared in a skit with Harry Seacombe. The review of the event in the Illustrated London News described them as perhaps the two outstanding performers of the evening. In 1963, Kit traveled to the Philippines for a concert at the Araneta Coliseum, where she learned the song phonetically entitled Wore Wore, which she included in her repertoire and later appeared in her live album. On January the 18th, 1968, during Lyndon B. Johnson's administration, Kit encountered a substantial professional setback after she made anti-war statements during a White House luncheon. Kit was asked by First Lady, Lady Bird Johnson, about the Vietnam War. She replied, quote, "You send the best of this country off to be shot and maimed. No wonder the kids rebel and take pot," end quote. During a question and answer session, Kit stated, "The children of America are not rebelling for no reason. They are not hippies for no reason at all. We don't have what we have on Sunset Boulevard for no reason. They are rebelling against something. There are so many things burning the people of this country, particularly mothers. They feel they are going to raise sons. And I know what it's like, and you have children of your own, Mrs. Johnson. We raise children and send them to war." End quote. Kit's remarks reportedly caused Mrs. Johnson to burst into tears. It is widely believed that Kit's career in the United States was ended following her statements about the Vietnam War, after which she was branded a sadistic nymphomaniac by the CIA. The CIA dossier about Kit was discovered by Seymour Hersh in 1975. Hersh published an article about the dossier in the New York Times. The dossier contained statements about Kit's personal life and family history, along with negative opinions of her that were held by former colleagues. Kit's response to the dossier was to say, "I don't understand what this is about. I think it's disgusting." Following the incident, Kit devoted her energies to performing in Europe and Asia. In February 2022, Catwoman vs. the White House, the New Yorker short documentary directed by Scott Calancio, used photographs, clippings, and footage to show how Kit disrupted the White House luncheon, taking Lyndon B. Johnson to task. Kit would later return to the White House on the 29th of January, 1978, after accepting an invitation from U.S. President Jimmy Carter to attend a reception honoring the 10th anniversary of the reopening of Ford's Theater. In the 1970s, Kit appeared on television several times on BBC's long-running variety show, The Good Old Days, and in 1987 took over from fellow American Dolores Gray in the London West End production of Stephen Sondheim's Follies, and returned at the end of that run to star in a one-woman show at the Shaftesbury Theater, both to tremendous acclaim. In both those shows, Kit performed the show-stopping theatrical anthem, I'm Still Here. Kit returned to New York City in a triumphant turn in the Broadway spectacle Timbuktu, a version of the perennial kismet set in Africa. In 1978,
In the musical, one song gives a recipe for mahoon, a preparation of cannabis, in which a sultry, purring rendition of the refrain, constantly stirring with a long wooden spoon, was distinctive. Kit was nominated for the Tony Award for Best Actress in a Musical for her performance. In the late 1990s, Kit appeared as the Wicked Witch of the West in the North American National Touring Company of The Wizard of Oz. In 2000, she again returned to Broadway in the short-lived run of Michael John Lachuisa's The Wild Party. Beginning in late 2000, Kit starred as the fairy godmother in the U.S. National Tour of Cinderella. In 2003, she replaced Chita Rivera in 9. Kit reprised her role as the fairy godmother at a special engagement of Cinderella, which took place at Lincoln Center during the holiday season of 2004. From October to early December of 2006, Kit co-starred in the off-Broadway musical Mimi the Duck. In 1978, Kit did the voiceover in a television commercial for the album Aja by the rock group Steely Dan. In 1988, she voiced Vietnam After the Fire, a British documentary which looked at the legacy left to the Vietnam people after the devastation of the war and showed the effects of bombings and defoliants on farmland and forests 13 years after the war ended. One of Kit's most unusual roles was as Ka in a 1994 BBC radio adaptation of The Jungle Book. In 1998, she voiced Bagheera in the live-action, direct-to-video Disney film The Jungle Book, Mowgli's Story. Kit also lent her distinctive voice to Yuzima in The Emperor's New Groove, for which she won her first Annie Award, and reprised her role in Kronk's New Groove and The Emperor's New Skull, for which Kit won 2 Emmy Awards for voice acting in an animated television production. From 2002 to 2006, she also voiced the villain Vexus in the Nickelodeon series My Life as a Teenage Robot. Like I always say, explore, connect, create, and inspire. You have been listening to The African American Experience, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. I'm Tina E. Gaffney. Thank you for listening.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Everyday, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is Do Not Stand at My Grave and Weep, by Mary Elizabeth Fry. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on snow. I am the sun on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift, uplifting rush of quiet birds in circling flight. I am the stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal, and read by me, Nikki Whichelow. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with the magic of poetry.